Should the president of a large conservative synagogue be fired just because he believes Jesus is the Jewish Messiah? Next on this edition of It's Supernatural.
Life after death experiences and angelic communications are on the increase. Terminally ill patients whom doctors have given no hope are unexplainably cured. People are being mysteriously protected from natural disasters. Sid Roth, your investigative reporter, examines this invisible world on It's Supernatural.
Hello, I'm Sid Roth, your investigative reporter, and Steve and Monica Kowalski. Steve's president of his large conservative synagogue in Utica, New York. He becomes a believer in Jesus. But there's a slight problem, you know, being president of a conservative synagogue and a believer in Jesus. Tell me, when you got a phone call one day and you knew that they knew you believed in Jesus as the Messiah.
Well, I was sitting in my office, Sid, at my business, and I get a call from the head of the ritual committee, and he asked me one question. He said, do you believe in Jesus? Because if you are, if you do, and if you're Jews for Jesus, then you can't be president of the synagogue.
Let's flash back 10 years. In fact, even before that, tell me about your Jewish background.
Well, my family's been Jewish forever, as far as I know. And I'm fourth generation. I'm fourth generation Jew in this country. I was raised a Jew, celebrated all the holidays. I was circumcised on the eighth day. I was bar mitzvahed. I later went on to get on the board of the synagogue and then finally worked up to president of the synagogue.
Now, Monica, you were not raised Jewish, but you converted. What type of Judaism did you convert to?
Well, I was Orthodox.
And why did you?
That was really not my choice, but there were Orthodox rabbis there with my rabbi when they spoke to me after the mikvah.
No, but why did you convert to Judaism?
Oh, I really don't know. I mean, I just felt when I met Stephen and he spoke about his Judaism, I was drawn to, you know, a man of faith.
So you did it for him, or would you say?
No, it did something to me inside. It brought something alive in me. I really felt the connection there.
So you like being part of the Jewish community?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't trade that for the world. It just felt right.
Now, Steve, you are a successful businessman. Tell me about your business.
Well, the business, again, I'm fourth generation in the family for our business. We're in the recycling business in upstate New York. And my grandfather's uncle started the business with a horse and cart way back in the early 1900s. And we've just grown the business over the course of four generations.
So why does such an established, nice, if I might say, Jewish family become drug addicts and alcoholics?
Well, I'm not exactly sure why we became that way, but maybe pressures of life, I'm not sure. You know, it's a lot of people say, well, Jews don't have a problem with alcohol, they don't have a problem with drugs, and that's not necessarily so. I mean, in our case, it wasn't so, in my case, and certainly I've met many other Jewish people who have the same problem, who are getting help for it. And
So take me to that night where you came home and you were so angry.
Well, it was in the middle of the day, actually, Sid, and I left work and I came home and I said, you know, I'm done. I've had it. You know, if there's a truck in the road, I'm steering in front of it and I want to end it. I can't stand the pain. And no truck was there. I get home. Monica and I had this tremendous argument. I threw her engagement ring across the room and I said, she kept saying, what do you want from me? What do you want from me? And I felt this welling up inside me, this powerful thing coming up. And out of my mouth came these words, I just want to be loved. It scared me. I went running down the hall to our bedroom. You know, in anguish, my hand went out against the wall. My hand went into through the wall.
Was it a flimsy wall?
No, it was you know, half-inch plaster wall. And I went, our bedroom door was at the end of the hall. I went into our bedroom, slammed the door. I heard the door crack. I jumped into bed, threw the covers over my head, and just started crying and screaming. and said, God, I'll do anything, just please stop this pain. I'll do anything to stop this pain. And I kept saying that over and over, that I'll do anything, God. And it was the first time I really, truly cried out for God in my heart, ever. Really, truly cried out for Him. And He answered the prayer.
You went into an AA program, you got...
Went to a rehab, went to an AA program. After that...
Were you set free?
I was set free before I went to the rehab. I was set free the moment
I... How can you get free from alcohol? That's a strong addiction, alcohol and drugs.
Tremendous. Tremendous.
You just instantly you got set free?
I'll tell you, when I went to the rehab, there was all these other people in the rehab, and they were telling me how, in the meetings at the rehab, they were saying how hard it was for them and how they really wanted some alcohol or some drugs. And I was sitting there, I'm thinking, what are they talking about? I don't have any, not only don't I want them, but God really even took the memory of the drugs and the alcohol away from me. It was powerful.
Monica, how about you? How about your drug and alcohol problem?
Well, when he went through this period, I supported him, and I didn't think that I had a problem with alcohol or drugs, because when he went into the rehab, I got rid of everything and supported him with the AA, the program. I never locked into it like he did, as far as like going to the meetings every day, sometimes twice a day. But our friends changed, so we had to let go of the past, pretty much. It was very difficult because people kept calling and asking for drugs, and there was none to be found, and we didn't want to have to explain a lot of things to them. But I knew that it was the right thing. I mean, we felt like...
But you still had a drinking problem.
Yeah, later on. Yeah, much later. We had really not necessarily grown close with that. We really didn't share the same things. He was really plugged in, and I was pretty much like standing with him, but not fully plugged in. I ended up drinking, and one night I got picked up for DWI, and it was a horrible night. I was arrested and handcuffed, and Stephen was out of town at the time. We were also going through divorce. We had decided that we were going to part our ways, and I went out to drink, and I think there was something lacking inside of me. I knew I was empty. I needed something, and alcohol never did it, but it was something I could grab.
How did you feel when you were arrested? Did they just see you driving drunk? Is that how they picked?
No, actually, my husband, Stephen, had said to my girls that if they ever saw me drinking and they had to get in a car with me, to call the police.
How old was your daughter?
She's 19 now.
How old was she when this happened?
She was about 16, something like that.
She turned you in. Police pick you up. And what did they put you actually in the jail?
No, they brought me down and booked me and fingerprinted and took the pictures, and you know, I had the whole...
How'd you feel?
I felt humiliated. I felt like a lousy mother.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. You're going to find out about how this impossible situation, through the supernatural intervention, became a living miracle. Don't go away.
We'll return with Sid Roth and It's Supernatural right after this.
Hello, I'm Sid Roth, your investigative reporter. I'm chatting with Steve and Monica Kowalski, and Steve, president of his conservative synagogue, successful businessman, alcoholic, drug addict, gets set free when he says, God, I'll do anything you want. But his wife was still an alcoholic. And as a matter of fact, Monica, a month before you got arrested and humiliated with the DWI, something really unusual happened to you. Tell me about it.
Right. I think the Lord was really calling me, because I went to have my fortune told, or whatever they do, the soothsayers do up up north. There's a little town I pretty well known near Buffalo, where people go up to get their fortunes told and whatever you want to have done. And I went with a group of ladies. The ladies always went out, you know, for the weekend type of thing, shopping and doing this stuff. So I went along with these friends of mine, and I had mine done first, and then I went back to the hotel. And it was a little community, so they were actually like row by row houses with these witches and soothsayers in them. And the hotel was right in the center of it, near, like next to a lake. So I was in the room, sitting there, the sun is pouring in, and I started to hear this music downstairs. And there were a group of people, and there must have been like a little church or chapel, whatever, nearby. And this group of people were by the lake, and they were singing Amazing Grace. And that song just did something to me. It was so powerful. I've never heard Amazing Grace sung like that in a cappella. And I sat on the edge of the bed, and I went out. I mean, I literally...
What do you mean you went out?
I don't know. I just passed out. And when I came to, I heard this banging at the door. And that's what woke me up. I was startled, and I sat up and went, oh, well, you know, it must have been one of my friends coming back to the room. So I got up and I went to the door, and there was nobody there.
So now, a month later, you get humiliated. Your own daughter calls the police department. They arrest you for driving under the influence of alcohol.
Right.
They take you. You're humiliated. Then what happened?
Well, the next day, I woke up. My husband, Stephen, wasn't home yet. He had gone to Double Briss in New York, and he wasn't home. I didn't go with him. But we were going through divorce, so we were ready to sign the papers that week. And I had to tell him. He called me from the train. I says, something happened. Actually, my heart was in the right place, because when I woke up that morning, I was repenting to everyone. I was calling people who I had hurt and asked for forgiveness. I asked the babysitter for forgiveness. I asked my children for forgiveness. My best friend, who came and rescued me from the police station, if I had hurt anybody, please forgive me. So Stephen called, and I said, I have to tell you what happened. And I told him, and he just was so happy that that happened. And I couldn't understand. I said, well, what's going to happen when he gets home? Because he's going to kick me out, because we had already worked out the divorce arrangements. And
so you were headed towards divorce.
Yeah, I was going to get the kids, and I would have the house. And
why did you want to divorce this woman?
Oh, because I had been sober and drug-free for 10 years. Her drinking problem was getting worse and worse and worse, and I just couldn't take it anymore. And I just came home. She was in Louisiana for a couple of weeks visiting her family, and when she came home, even before she came home, I called her up and I said, this is it. I just, you know, when you get home, I want to start the proceedings for separation and divorce.
Now, Monica, you called a friend that you knew was a Christian, and he introduced you to his pastor. You went to the pastor, and what happened?
Well, the pastor said to me after 2 hours of speaking with him, as we were walking out of his office, that he said, your marriage is not over. I believe your marriage will be healed. And I just, you know, I looked at him. I said, what are you talking about? I said, you know, we're going to do this. I never thought there was anything wrong with divorcing someone. I never heard that divorce, I always thought it was an option. You know, I didn't know God hates divorce. So when I... hearing this Christian man, this pastor, assistant pastor, tell me this, I said, oh, okay, if you say so. But, you know, in my heart, I didn't really know what he meant by that. But what he did was he planted a seed of belief, you know, that I would receive. And I walked out of there changed. I mean, it was little by little, layer upon layer, precept upon precept.
You went to you started going to a church service there. Tell me about
it. He invited me to the church service that week. Now, this was a Tuesday, and he said Thursday night was a service that they have midweek. So I said, well, okay, I'll do that, you know, so maybe I'll do that. So I did go, and when I walked in, immediately when I sat down in my seat, was the group musicians up there playing Amazing Grace. And
same song that had such an effect a month earlier.
And I sat there weeping, and I couldn't believe. I said, this is what he wanted. God wants me. That's what it is. God wants me. And I was drawn to the presence of God there.
Now, Steve, when your wife told you that she's going to a church and she now believes in Jesus. She converted to traditional Judaism. What did you think?
Well, I was president of the synagogue at the time, and I said, of course we were getting divorced, so I almost didn't care in a way, but I did because of our situation. And I said, listen, I don't care what you say, just don't tell them your last name, because I don't want to get back to the synagogue, that my wife is going to a church. And
what difference does it make? You're divorcing this woman.
Well, something in me said to tell her that, and so I did. And then, but every Sunday morning she'd get up and she would get dressed in this white dress and with a Bible under her arm and scoot off to this church. Finally, one day I said, I better go with you because I just want to see, I don't want to see anything strange happen to you. I mean, we still have our children and all that. And so I went and I walked in there and it was so foreign to me. I'm telling you, it was so foreign to me. This church, the service, the talking about Jesus, the preaching, it was all foreign to me. And I remember they asked for people to come up for prayer. Monica says, well, go up there. And I went up there, but nothing really happened.
But then you got a phone call from a friend. You're talking to this person, and he tells you about a rabbi.
Right.
Barry Feinman. Tell
right.
me about that.
I was sitting at my office one day, and this guy who we do business with, a Jewish fellow, who he and his wife had been witnessing to Monica and I for a number of years about Yeshua, the Jewish Messiah, he called and asked for my brother about some business thing, and I said, I'll take that call. And I said, Sam, I got a problem. I said, I'm president of the synagogue, as you know. Monica, my wife has been going running around to churches on Sunday mornings. Oh, what do I do, Sam? He says, wait. He says, hold on. I'm going to have this messianic rabbi, this rabbi, he said, this rabbi call you from Albany. So that night or the next night, I get a call at home from a rabbi, Barry Feinman, from Albany. And I wasn't there. Monica and I happened to be out somewhere together. And when I got home, I called him back. It was at 10 o'clock at night. It was a Friday night. And I called him, and the conversation went for 2 hours.
2 hours?
Yes.
Hold that thought. He didn't know it, but this rabbi was a messianic Jewish rabbi, a rabbi that believes Jesus is the Jewish Messiah. Wait till you hear what happens next on It's Supernatural. Be right back. Outrageous. A cross with a tallit? Or is it? You see, Christianity is Jewish. Jesus is Jewish. His first followers had to be Jews to even follow him. All of the books of the Bible written by Jews. So how did something so Jewish get so opposite of Judaism? Had some help. You see, what happened was there was a great deal of prejudice against Jews. And the first followers of Jesus said, we're being persecuted for following Jesus. Let's not be persecuted for being Jews. So let's denude the church of its Jewish roots. Let's call Passover Easter after the fertility goddess Ishtar. And before you know it, a Jewish person looks at Christianity and says, there's nothing Jewish. But if I got news for you, Christianity is Jewish. Hello, Sid Roth, your investigative reporter. So, Steve Kowalski, president of his traditional synagogue in Utica, New York, big synagogue, about ready, headed towards divorce with his wife. His wife is still drinking. They were both into drugs and alcohol. He got supernaturally set free, but they're headed towards divorce. And he's on the telephone at 10 p.m. at night with a messianic Jewish rabbi asking questions. And after 2 hours of conversation with Rabbi Barry Feinman, you decided to go to his congregation, and what was it like?
Right, well, he invited us to the Rosh Hashanah service, of all services, which was coming up within a week or two, and I said, well, we'll try to come. And he really didn't think I was coming because he said, well, president of a synagogue, he's just...
Of a traditional synagogue.
Right, he's just really kind of humoring me. But really what happened was that something was stirring inside me. And he told me to read Isaiah 53. Mm-hmm. That night I read Isaiah 53 and the words were leaping up off the page. I said, there's something about this. So it's really stirred something inside me. But for a president of a conservative synagogue not to be at his synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, you know, was...
That's pretty unusual.
That's very unusual. But I told the rabbi and the executive director that we were going to Albany. We were invited to be with friends. And so we went. And when I walked into that Messianic synagogue, and believe me, Sid, it was like a storefront. And the conservative synagogue was like palatial. So I walked in, I was like, what is this place? But when I stepped inside this building, I just felt I was home. The service started, with...
What made you feel that you were home?
I don't know. It was a feeling inside me. It was just a feeling. And we went into the sanctuary, and the service started in about 10 or 15 minutes, and I just started weeping. And I hadn't cried in years. I started, tears were rolling down my cheek. And then eventually, and I don't even remember the series of events, but at some point in the service, the rabbi asked if anybody would like to, accept Yeshua, the Jewish Messiah, into their heart. My hand went up. I mean, it went up. It surprised me.
What do you mean your hand went?
I said, I'll do it.
President of a conservative synagogue, big one, your hand went up to make Yeshua, Jesus, your Messiah?
Well, I just felt that in my heart, that was the right thing. That God was doing something in my life, in Monica's life, that I didn't know what it was, but all I know is this is what I had to do.
What effect was it then when you went back to a traditional synagogue? Tell me the next time you went in a traditional...
Was in the next service.
The next day.
Yeah, the next day for the second day of Rosh Hashanah. We walked in, and Monica and I, on the way home that night before, we were saying, well, she said, we can't go back there. I mean, how can we go back to that synagogue when we've experienced this incredible, feeling of God in this Messianic synagogue? I said, well, we have to go back. I'm the president. You know, so we walk in there that day. Everybody knew we were going to be divorced. I hadn't been at the synagogue for the previous day, which was an important day of Rosh Hashanah. We walk in together, smiling, and everybody turns around to look, and they, I can imagine what they were thinking. But when we sat down in our seats quietly, I said to Monica, I said, I feel the presence of God in this place.
In the traditional synagogue.
In the traditional synagogue. And I open up the prayer book, and I'm reading the prayers, and all of a sudden I see in Hebrew the name of Yeshua. Which is Hebrew for Jesus, or salvation. And I look, and I said, Monica, he's in this prayer book. Yeshua's in this prayer book, and they had the Torah service. They opened the ark. As soon as they opened the ark, it was amazing. It was like a wave came flying out of that thing and hit me, and tears started coming to my eyes. I just knew that God was there in that place, and that he was showing me that he could be there in that place. It was just so powerful.
What happened to your marriage? I mean, you're headed towards divorce.
Well,
now, you might have been smiling walking in there. You might have felt all the presence of God, but what happened to two of you?
Well, the day before, when we went out to lunch with the rabbi and his wife from the Messianic synagogue, they said, well, what do you think? And I says, well, it's wonderful, but we're still being divorced. The rabbi's wife looked at us in the eye and says, God hates divorce. God hates divorce, and your marriage is going to be healed. You are not getting divorced. God's got a plan for the two of you, and that's it. And, from that point on, God started working in our lives. And eventually, the marriage, of course, we're here five years later.
You're here, but Monica, do you love this man that punched through the wall?
Yeah, I love him. God has a way of supernaturally changing your heart so you don't remember what that person thought he was. He becomes really who God intended him to be.
And Steve, you said, I just want love.
I just want to be loved.
Have you received that
love? Oh, have I received it?
Did you receive it from the conservative synagogue? What have ultimately happened when they found out you believed in Jesus?
Well, that was a wild time. They asked me to, actually, I told them. I ended up telling them. And we had a meeting. We had various meetings of the executive committee, and I gave my testimony to them, and I told them how God had healed our marriage and the drug, everything. And so they decided to keep me on at the first meeting. Hmm. But all the men went home to their wives, and one thing led to another. And the rabbi called me the next day and said, we can't have his president.
So all you have to do is renounce you believe in Jesus, and you can be president.
Right.
Why didn't you?
They asked me. They said,
Four generations of Jews in this synagogue. How could you do that, Steve?
I said, listen, I believe in my heart that this is the right thing, believing in Yeshua, that Yeshua is the Jewish Messiah. I said, I can't put this on the shelf. I said it would be betraying not only what I believe, but it would be betraying God. God has put this in me. So I can't do that. I have to believe. And if I have to step down, I'll step down. I'll do whatever, whatever I need to do. So I stepped, they asked me to step down as president, and I did.
Steve said, all I want is love. All I need is love. But he's not talking about love of a husband and wife, because that's good, and that's what God wants. But he's talking about something inside of him that was so empty. And he knew there had to be something more. And when he reached out and made Yeshua his Messiah, his marriage was restored. His mind was restored. The shalom inside of him was restored. And he became, I'm not going to say he became a Jew, because he already was a Jew, but he became a true Jew, a praiser and worshiper of God. He knows God. Thank you.